The Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria, which is facing this $5 billion financing gap for 2009 and 2010, it's a product of the fund's success in many ways because, in fact, a number of years ago, the donors had said if countries can actually reach the level of demand, the Global Fund's own board, which includes donor countries and developing countries and, in fact, the G8 in Germany, all committed to actually providing the financing that was needed if demand was there. And so what's happened is we've seen a scale-up of demand, but the Global Fund will need about $8 billion, only has about $3 billion in the bank from donors. That's where the gap is. So now what we have to make sure is that this financial crisis doesn't become an excuse for actually not meeting that commitment.
Well, do you think it's feasible to expect that the investment pipeline will continue? Is there a cost-effective priority compared to other governmental crises to keep these three very prominent debilitating diseases at the top of our list of urgent challenges?
I think it could be argued that the Global Fund is probably the most innovative, far-reaching, results-driven health financing mechanism that we've got. It's providing two-thirds of the external financing for TB and malaria, a quarter for AIDS. Not only does it continue to be really important to fund these health programs in the context of this financial crisis, it actually becomes more important because we know that one of the biggest economic drags on poor people is health problems. So if we don't actually have these resources to supplement what countries are able to do, what you're going to see is a kind of double or triple impact of this economic crisis on poor people and on national economic productivity.
How does fighting these diseases influence world economic growth, particularly if we neglect to fund them at their effective targeted levels?
Some of the biggest microfinance programs in the world that are reaching some of the very poorest people, programs like Grameen Bank, like BRAC, the biggest NGO in the world, in their microfinance programs, what they found consistently is the biggest reason that people don't move over the poverty line is actually health problems, that someone in the family gets ill and it drains the resources. What the data has shown is like huge impact of diseases like malaria on just the economic productivity in Africa. And similarly, tuberculosis, which is a disease that primarily affects people between the ages of 15 and 45. The income generators in a family, they're affected by this. And then one person with TB can also infect 10 to 15 other people in a year. So you get this enormous effect if you actually treat that person in reducing the spread of the disease, which is going to have ongoing huge economic burden for countries.
Now, with regard to Davos, some people are calling conditions for this year's summit a world turned upside down. What do you think is the prognosis today for financial resources for combating hunger, disease, and other issues such as global warming and the environment?
I think that there has been such a commitment on the part of donors over the last number of years and such a proven track record that I actually feel that donors have made long-term commitments. President Obama has talked about supporting the U.S. fair share of the Global Fund. I believe people see how important these priorities are. So are there going to be financing challenges? Certainly. But I really do feel that there are core commitments that donors have made and that if the U.S. really steps forward on the Global Fund, it could really encourage other donors who have certainly made long-term commitments to even possibly make additional bolder commitments. You know, the message we definitely want to get out was that the donor governments had really made commitments to countries if there was demand that they would meet it. So I think the thing that we would want to encourage is that countries continue to be bold in their requests that they make on these issues and really ask for what's needed, because I really do think there is a desire to respond if there are good plans that I think collectively we will find the resources to meet those plans. The thing that we don't want to do is really discourage demand. This is a point for countries to be bold and say what they really need for their people. And I think, you know, we as civil society also really want to show here in the U.S. and in other countries that there is broad support for these global health and global poverty priorities.
Now, you conducted a teleconference last week precisely on the goals of the Global Fund.
Exactly.
And in connection with the Davos World Economic Conference. What was said about the conference and how things were proceeding, and what kind of an effect do you think that it may have on funding for these diseases?
One, it was a very serious and in some ways somber meeting of the World Economic Forum. On the other hand, there was a real strong reiteration from folks that we had on the call from Davos, Rajat Gupta, who is the chair of the board of the Global Fund and senior partner at McKinsey, Peter Chernin, who's the COO of News Corp, and he's chairman of Malaria No More. And we also had, not Davos, but also joining on the call, the head of UNAIDS, Michelle Cidabe, and Jeffrey Sachs from the Earth Institute, and there was across the board a call for not stepping back on these incredibly important global health commitments, and specifically the Global Fund, in the face of this. You know, that was echoed by people like Bill Gates and others, that, and again, the message being not only does it continue to be important to keep these commitments, but it actually becomes more important just in the face of what poor individuals are facing and what national governments are facing, you know, in the face of these economic crises. So it was definitely a somber Davos, but there was a pretty clear message that came out of this that we have to maintain these health commitments and we have to maintain these commitments on fighting poverty.
Just like on Wall Street and the crisis there, there are some upsides to the lowering of prices for commodities and things for developing countries. With oil prices at $41 a barrel, do you think that this boosts some opportunities for countries' hopes of bringing about economic gains?
Yeah, the whole world, and obviously all of us, including plenty of people in this country, but certainly in poor countries, people were hit with these sort of multiple crises, right? And one of them being the cost of energy. So the fact that that's better, does that reduce some of the pressure on countries? Absolutely. But certainly, given this economic crisis, there are continued other pressures. And I think that that argues for the absolute importance of continued leadership and engagement by the U.S. and the U.K. and Canada and other donors to keep those commitments. But, yeah, does that take a bit of the pressure off from countries? Yeah, I think we all hope so, and for poor people in those countries. But we still need to clearly maintain these commitments. And, you know, and not being flip in any way, I do think if you look at what we could buy for $5 billion in filling this gap in the next 2 years for the Global Fund and $4 billion in bonuses for Merrill Lynch, I mean, I think that it provides some kind of counterpoint to what's possible in the world, and I don't take casually that large amount of money given all of the multiple needs, but I think it does make a really powerful case to say this could literally save millions of lives.
Now, nobody seems to really know how to recover from this economic crisis. What has this done to the optimistic feelings that resulted from the G8's Glen Eagles Agreement and chances for countries to get lower debt burdens and have more room to function economically and taking care of their health needs?
All of us that have been supporting these efforts are watching and a bit nervous given all of the challenges of this economic crisis, but I think we're also encouraged that at this point, you know, our own governments haven't yet stepped back. And again, I think if we look at what a few billion dollars here and several billion dollars can buy, I think it's such high impact for relatively modest costs. I think we're still remaining optimistic that a lot of these programs will go forward. And again, because there's so much more needed than ever on the part of these countries, I think there's an added benefit to the relationships with other countries. And I'm also hugely optimistic that this new administration, facing enormous challenges, also wanting to re-engage even more with the world around a range of development issues, that there's a good opportunity to actually do more on this. So I remain really optimistic that the U.S. is going to take a lead role on this and work with other donor governments to make sure that we don't actually back off on our commitments.